Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thank you, Domati. It's 10:10. I'm in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. This is John Williams. Producer Griffin Filipich is on the other side of the glass. Domati is in the new studios at 303 East Wacker. And I'm just catching up with everybody. So, Joe, are you in-house or are you on the road today?
I am on the premises, 303 East Wacker.
By the way, I went over to 303 East Wacker earlier this morning to just grab a few notes before I came over to Trib Tower. And Domati, there was a beautiful pen set on my desk.
I know nothing about it.
Do you know anything about this?
I do, actually.
I was marveling the other day at the really, well, what kind of pen is this? A pen that you use, like an old-fashioned quill pen.
Yeah, fountain pen.
Fountain pen. And I know you like those, and you let me drive yours for a little while, and then I gave it back. Ever impressed that you have something like that? A person who cares that much about the pen in their hand is a person who cares about the ink they put on the paper and the words that come forward. People who don't care aren't going to take the time to get a beautiful quill pen, but Domati does. And now I've got one. I got up my game, dude.
You have.
Where did
now
this
you
come
have
from?
It.
Thank you. Thank
you're
you
welcome.
So much.
You're
for
welcome.
This.
I was thinking about this for a while back, and I was asking Joe, you know, do you think John will like this? He said he talks to Thomas Jefferson from time to time. I'm pretty sure he likes old fashioned pens. So
yeah, no kidding.
I had to get you one, and I thought you'd enjoy. I got one for Lou too, but he's out and about, so I didn't get a chance to get it to him. So if he's listening, it's
what
one
a nice guy
too.
You are. So here it is with different sort of tips. I guess that controls the thickness of the flow.
Yeah, so you've got extra fine, medium, bold, depending on what your flavor is.
Ah, so if I want to say something significant, like get this done now, I'll put in the bold one.
Oh, you got to.
But if I say, could I just maybe get an extra cup of coffee in the morning,
make
then that would be
fine.
The lighter one.
There you go.
Fine.
And then you can switch them off and do like presidents do when they sign things. When you sign a King John proclamation,
right?
Switch the tips off and there you go. You know, so I hope you're happy Father's Day.
When I write a love letter to Brenda, maybe the medium, maybe the finer one, something that's a little more sensitive or delicate that way.
It depends on what kind of note you're writing. Yeah. I don't know.
There will be no more emails from John Williams. Everything will be handwritten, perfectly fine.
Most dear Joe, as you consider the sports today, I would appreciate if you would...
It'll only take about 5 minutes to get over here, but yeah, it's quality, not quantity.
By the way, Joe, so you did the hockey score, the soccer score.
Mm-hmm.
Iceland and Brazil played to a draw.
Iceland and Argentina 1-1.
See, that's the thing. I think Americans know that they don't know soccer, and I also think they know that they should, and a lot of us are a little insecure about it. It's at times like this that I go, there's a whole planet, and we're the outliers, and I know I should know or care more about soccer, but I don't have that bone.
I mean, I think it's okay to just be into it when it's around. I think it's okay to be a fair weather fan.
I do, too, and I think the temptation, though, is as we might do women's softball or track and field or pick the sport that is out there but maybe isn't in the big four wheelhouse of America, is to mock it, to say, oh, God, these soccer people. You know, don't do that.
Well, how about the craze curling had this past Winter Olympics? Everyone was all of a sudden into curling because USA came back and won gold.
But if you had said just now, and in World Cup soccer, Wheeling lost to the South Pole, I would have gone, what do you know? Wheeling's got up their game. I mean, I would not know.
Ooh, that's a tough upset.
You could have said Wheeling lost to the South Pole 47-3, and I'd go, wow, that was quite a game. All right, then. I wouldn't have known. Drop that in there. Just throw in a fake score and see if we even know. You know,
like 4.5-12.
Schaumburg took on Uranus and lost 4.5-12. Yeah, that was a road game, and that's pretty surprising.
I don't care about soccer either, but you can make fun of it. But the joke's on you because the rest of the world,
that's true.
It's just you look kind of like
we're in the minority
yourself as the
just
fool,
put up a sign that says, "Hey, I'm stupid," right?
Because
that's what it is, or at least it's getting there. Americans are handicapped in that they really just don't have the tradition of it. A lot of our kids play soccer, but then they don't go on to professional soccer careers or even aspire to it the way We do baseball, basketball, football, a little bit of hockey. By the way, by habit today, I went to the seventh floor of the Tribune Tower, got in and came up and saw the disheveled newsroom and offices. There is an empty bottle of red wine on a console in the middle of our newsroom. That's true. The Tribune Tower reception and security staff have been so kind to us, especially the last week or so. A woman this morning said, "Change can be good, John. Positive feelings to y'all." Rokon said yesterday that I have probably logged more hours in this showcase studio than anyone. And now that he mentions it, I think he's right. Longtime WGN personalities like Milt Rosenberg and Spike Odell and Bob Collins and Nick DiGilio didn't or don't work out of the showcase studio. They use Studio A inside. Kathy and Judy are probably number two or maybe number one on the hours logged in the showcase studio. They, one of us is number one and one of us is number two. It's been an interesting perch. If you sit anywhere and watch a city go by for 12 to 20 hours a week, and those have been my studio hours for the last 25 years or so, 12 to 20 hours a week sitting here, looking out at you, you see a lot of things. I'm always reminded what a great-looking city Chicago is and what an international destination it is. Often we turn the microphones on and you'll hear languages and accents that aren't from Chicago. They wave to the man in the glass and we wave back. Take not for granted your good fortune if you're listening to me in Huntley or Oak Lawn, that you are so close to a place that people save their money for a year to fly to and visit. Along with tourists, many of you throughout the area have made the trek to the Showcase Studio to see us, especially this week, and we really appreciate that. Sometimes family and friends have stood there, and I've waved to them and didn't connect them to me. It's such an out-of-context experience for me to see my cousin or a classmate from Manuka suddenly pop up. I do a double take. "Do I know you?" And they'll go, "Yeah, I'm your cousin." Oh, gosh. I've seen some strange things sitting here, too. A few young men were pushing each other around one day, just playing, I thought. But when one of them pulled the jacket off of the other and started running, followed by a few other men, I realized I'd just witnessed a mugging. When traffic cleared out of the way for a fire truck on Michigan Avenue, I saw a taxi try to cut in front of the fire truck and take advantage of an empty lane. The fire truck T-boned the taxi. Once during an interview about the toy trade show, a woman approached our window with a cinder block lifted over her head, and she threw it through the window as we talked. And then she walked out into the traffic and laid down in the middle of the northbound lane on Michigan Avenue. I've seen every sex act pantomimed. Every one. Don't come up today and think you've got something I haven't seen. One day, two women and a man in their 50s, I'd say, dressed for business, walked up and waved. And then one of the women pulled down her dress top and pushed her breast to the glass. The man in the colorful suits and the walking man, legends in Chicago, were regular walkers-by and waivers to the showcase. And every celebrity and politician that visited the Tribune Tower has walked by this glass. A statue of a giant, creepy man talking to a giant Abraham Lincoln took up temporary residence right there. And a 40-foot-tall Marilyn Monroe with the upblown skirt was a neighbor for us for a year or so here, too. But I want to tell you this. The thing I will remember the most, and most fondly, are the anonymous faces. I thought again about that last week when a group of three young men with dark beards and skin stood and watched me, maybe 10 feet from the glass for a while, and then I saw them and I waved, and their faces erupted into the biggest, whitest, most joyful smiles you'd ever see. And they waved back and nodded their heads, almost hopping in place, thrilled that the radio people saw and shared with them a silent hello. And that happens all the time. Families old and young, near and far, people who know who we are and people who don't have any idea who we are all share the biggest smiles and the most kind waves. We do not have a sign above our studio that says, "Look as happy as you can," but that's what you do when you see us. Imagine the good fortune of someone who sits for 20 hours a week looking at that. that my colleagues and I will miss. But more important than that are the facts that you will still be listening and we will still be talking with you starting Monday morning. Monday at 7:20, in fact, from a beautiful new studio, 18 floors above the Chicago River, our Steve Cochran will give you a chance to win a new 2018 Chevy Silverado. And it won't sound like anything has changed because nothing will have changed. We will still be and always will be WGN. So these are our last 90 minutes in the Showcase studio. If you are celebrating Father's Day, and I know a lot of you are, although Mary Schmeek has a column online today, and you'll see it in the newspaper tomorrow, about how maybe Father's Day is a little antiquated. The world's much more complicated. There's a lot of people who don't have fathers or didn't have great relationships with their fathers. And Mary is taking a step back in her column tomorrow. It's ever thoughtful like Mary Schmeek is, and sort of reexamining these sort of built-in days on the calendar. But there it is for a lot of us. And there is an article in Time magazine right now, and it says, if Dad wants to, or if you want to do nothing for a full weekend, idleness is not a bad thing. In fact, idleness is probably a healthy thing. And it reminded me that I saw a story in Daniel Pink's new book, When. When is the title of the book, The Scientific Secrets of Perfect Timing. And he talks about a lot of things, but here he talks about sleeping. And if Dad wants to take a nap today or tomorrow, here is evidence why he should. He writes, one well-known NASA study found that pilots who napped for up to 40 minutes subsequently showed a 34% improvement in reaction time and a twofold increase in alertness. Joe, do you nap? Domiti, Griffin, you're not a napper, are you? You guys either don't have time or aren't in the habit of napping, I'll bet, right?
I only nap. That's my thing.
Really?
Seriously, naps all throughout the day.
And you carve out time specifically for that?
Yes.
And people are cool with that?
I just
had to wake him up a few seconds ago. He was sleeping on the desk.
I really was.
I'm a terrible sleeper. I'm kind of like Domiti, though. I can squeeze in a nap here or there.
I never go to sleep early enough, but if you squeeze in a whole bunch of cat naps throughout the day, you can live on 5 hours at the end of the night.
How about you, Griff? You make time for naps, don't you?
I missed a couple naps last week, and by like Thursday afternoon, I was like, I'm absolutely dead. So yeah, I need a nap every day.
This guy in this book says that a 20-minute nap is what you need. 5 minutes isn't enough. 10 minutes, maybe. 15, 20, that's the sweet spot. But if you go to sleep for an hour, 90 minutes, it's actually worse. It doesn't do you the good. 15 to 20 minutes, once, twice a day, is the healthiest thing you can do for yourself. Domiti, you're way ahead of the curve, man. Domiti. Hey,
so.
Domiti! Wake up!
that 90 minutes, once you get in the REM cycle and then you disrupt it, you're groggy for weeks.
That's it. I mean, that's my problem, too. My wife's very good. She will set the alarm for 10 minutes. If we have friends coming over, like, and we're hustling all day and getting things ready and cleaning the bathroom and sweeping out corners of rooms they'll never even see, but that's what we do when friends come over. And so we'll just bust ourselves. We'll go. And then we got to get dinner ready, and then we got to get them ice and stuff like that. Brenda will schedule a 10-minute nap, and it will positively refresh her. It's amazing to me, and I've seen it work many, many times. When I've gone to sleep, I go to sleep for a long time, and I wake up, and it's not worth it to me because I'm doing it wrong. You got to get up after 15 minutes, and then you go. And the proof is just amazing. But I don't know that people appreciate that. Like, does anybody sleep at work? I'm interested in this. I got to take a break, but 312-981-7200. Do you carve out a cat nap, and how do you do it? And when? Do you have it regularly scheduled? Do you just take it when you can get it? They did a test with the Italian police department, and they found that when the Italian cops schedule a nap in their workday, they get back in their Italian cruisers, Fiats, I think, and they have fewer accidents. And on the evidence goes. It's going to get warm. It was 72 and I came in along the lake this morning. Now it's 82 and... As you just heard, it's going to get up to 624 degrees.
From the first time the doctor placed you in my arms, I knew I'd meet death before I let you meet harm. Although questions arose in my mind, would I be man enough against wrong? Choose right and be standing up. From the hospital that first
night, listening to here, Griffin?
It's Will Smith.
People driving off fast got me kind of upset. Got you home safe, placed you in your bed.
A little Father's Day music for you today. Yeah. I haven't heard Will in a while. Kind of nice to hear Will Smith for a change.
He's rapping again, too, by the way, John. I don't know.
Is he really?
Yes.
And is he any good at it?
He still's got it. What you think, Griff?
It depends on who you ask.
That's fair.
I mean, I was a child when this and many of his biggest hits came out. So I think Getting Jiggy With It was one of the first singles I ever had.
And that was such a great introductory kind of, what do you call that, rap song? Or what was...
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. He had been a rapper for a long time at that point.
It had been so approachable for a lot of us. We could get into that.
Yeah,
it's good lead in, good gateway rap song.
Exactly. So. And then it got more complicated for some of us. And we went, I can't do that. But this I can do.
Yeah. Anyway, happy Father's Day.
It's 10:42. Thomas Jefferson comes to Chicago. Again, at the Mack Theater, we're going back to the College of DuPage every year or half year. I invite a past president, Thomas Jefferson or Teddy Roosevelt, to say hello. And so Thomas Jefferson's coming back. We'll be at the College of DuPage at the Mack, the Performing Arts Center at the College of DuPage, August 18th. We're going to do a summer show Saturday at 10 a.m. August 18th. Circle that on your calendar. Saturday, August 18th. Details will be at WGNRadio.com/events on Tuesday. That's when you'll be able to buy tickets. Sponsored by American Sale. Thank you, American Sale. Saturday, August 18th. Circle that on your calendar. And Tuesday morning, make sure that you listen to or go to WGNRadio.com/events. To get tickets, the title of the show this year is Thank You, Thomas Jefferson. We needed that. It'll be good humor and good sense from one of our founding fathers. Steve Johnson in the Chicago Tribune wrote about the new exhibit, Antarctic Dinosaurs at the Field Museum. He tells the story of Captain Robert Falcon Scott, who is on an expedition to the South Pole. It seems so weird to be putting dinosaurs and the South Pole in the same conversation. But, Johnson writes, Scott and his four men made it to that magical spot, the South Pole, January 1912. But the British adventurer learned that he was 34 days behind Norwegian Roald Amundsen. And then, on the way back, the Scott team, frostbitten and low on supplies, perished when a blizzard blew in and stranded them just 11 miles from the nearest supply depot, the exhibition sign says. This is at the Field Museum. It opened yesterday to the public. It's going to be there for a few months. And the guy that put it together, the curator, is... what phone line is the curator on there, Griff? I want to make sure that I push the right button here. Peter McAvicky, Dr. Peter McAvicky is on line 7. Doctor, this is John Williams. You're on WGN. How are you?
Good morning, John. I'm well. Thank you.
Fascinating stuff, and congratulations on what I know has been years worth of work. Finally, we're able to see it here in Chicago. But why are we telling the story of an exhibition or an expedition to the South Pole?
Well, the story is so much bigger than Robert Falcon Scott and his team. That's sort of the jumping-off point, of course, for our exhibit, which focuses on geological and paleontological exploration of Antarctica. And the reason we introduced the exhibit with the Scott expedition is that they were actually among the first teams to collect fossils there. Amazingly, even as they were dying basically of starvation on their return journey from the pole, they hung on to the last thing that was on their sled was 40 pounds of rocks with fossils in them. They felt they were so important that they actually were willing to keep dragging them in the hopes of bringing them back to civilization. They didn't, but now you can actually come and see those fossils for yourselves. They're part of our exhibit.
Yeah. You've actually have the actual sled, some of the actual clothing, and some of the actual artifacts that they died to bring back to us, right?
We have the fossils, and then we do have the type of clothing and sled they used, but from other expedition team members. So Scott and his fellows are actually still buried in the ice, below the ice shelf in Antarctica. But we have other expeditionary gear that their team members used side by side with some of the equipment that we use when we go down there to do our fossil collecting. So you can sort of compare and contrast how the equipment and mode of transport has changed over the last 100 years.
You know, the idea of going to the South Pole just sounds, even today, a little terrifying to me. It's just too cold and the elements are so bad. But imagine doing that without modern technology and modern clothing. I don't know how they did it.
It was much more precarious, obviously, as you can see. It took a lot more preparation. But the basic principles that they used are the same ones we use today. You have to have depots laid out. So when they went to the pole, they came down one austral summer and laid out a line of depots to rely on. And then the next summer, they overwintered, they actually made their attempt at the pole. And in similar fashion, when the camps we work out of, the remote camps in the central Transantarctic Mountains, so about 300 miles from the South Pole proper, you know, they have fuel depots for helicopters and aircraft laid out along the way. So the basic principles are still the same.
Yeah. Because you have been there to study as well. But what are dinosaur bones doing on the South Pole?
It's a fascinating story. And the importance of those Scott fossils is that they were among the first bits of evidence that that told scientists that the Antarctic continent had not always been covered by ice, that it had a different past prehistorically. And to access that geological history, we have to go to the few places where the bedrock is actually exposed above the ice. So the central Transantarctic Mountains is one of those places.
Yeah, but are you saying that, because I know the continents have moved, was Antarctica, was that landmass somewhere else where it was warmer, or was it warmer down there? Did we used to have dinosaurs in the South Pole?
It was very close to where it is today, slightly off, but the main difference was that it was connected to other continents.
Right.
And because of that connection, water currents, the ocean currents, circulated in a different manner, and so the warm water from the tropics, from the equator, actually reached the poles, and so you had a much more temperate climate. So you had forests, you had animals, including dinosaurs and various other fossil evidence that we have for different types of animals.
I see. So,
and that all changed about 40 million years ago. So the ice sheets that we see today are not that old. I mean, during the age of dinosaurs, it was a very different place.
Hmm. Dr. Peter McAvee is on the phone line. He's the curator of this new exhibit at the Field Museum. You have, there's a pretty big dinosaur at the end of this exhibit that we get to see, right?
Yeah, there's a, we show actual fossils of four of the dinosaurs we have from central Transantarctic Mountains. And the star of the show, so to speak, is Cryolophosaurus. It's a large, about 25-foot-long predatory dinosaur. It's named for this funky crest it has on top of its head above the eye sockets. It looks a little bit like a pompadour.
Oh, is this the Elvisaurus?
This is the one that was dubbed Elvisaurus back in 1994. But this is a fairly large animal, especially for its time. It's only about half the size or Sioux in linear dimensions, but when it was around in the early Jurassic, 195 million years ago, this was the biggest land predator that we know of anywhere.
So as I understand it, you started the launching point of that failed expedition to the South Pole, and then we sort of work our way through until we finally get to the story and the vision of this dinosaur that once roamed the Earth where the South Pole is today. You have traveled there. To the South Pole on some of these exhibits or expeditions yourself. What's the nature of the South Pole these days? We hear that it's threatened by the planet getting warmer. Did you see evidence of that?
Well, it's very interesting. When you're there, everything is literally ice and rock. So you have this very alien landscape, even for someone who's used to Chicago winters. But some of the folks we went with, we had a mountaineer who just this year had done, you know, his 30th season in the Antarctic. And he noted that we actually saw meltwater on one of the peaks. At 10,000 feet, there was a little bit of meltwater, and he had never seen that before. So, you know, there were sort of little signs of climate change there. The principal type of change that's happening is that the ice sheets are moving faster. So the ice that should be sitting on top of the South Pole is actually sliding out towards the ocean at a greater rate than it has before. That's not something you can observe on the ground, but it's very clear from satellite imagery and other data. And that's something you can actually see in the exhibit when we get to the right to the very end, the last gallery in the exhibit. We have a nice sort of media presentation on the continent.
Yeah.
And we actually have one of these ice flow maps, so you can sort of see how that's happening.
The exhibit is at the Field Museum, open to the public yesterday, and it's going to be there how long? How long are you all going to have this up?
Yeah, so it'll be open till the 6th of January, and then it's going to travel on from the Field Museum to Los Angeles and around the country.
Okay, so half a year to take advantage of it starting now, and it's one of those things where if you put it off, you're going to be sorry. You're going to be busy at Christmas time. I'm recommending you go, I don't know, when it's 100 degrees outside, that's probably a good place to go. And that's to the Field Museum. Dr. Peter McAvicky is the curator of that. Well done, Doctor. Thanks for joining us, and good luck with that this summer.
Thank you, John.
Yeah, have a good day. It's 10:52. Hey, I said I've got something for Dad for Father's Day. A giveaway you can get for him in a minute. Yeah, it looks lovely downtown. Folks are wearing their shorts, and I'll tell you what, downtown Chicago, despite the heat, is very busy along Michigan Avenue as folks enjoy a warm and rain-free weekend. Although last night, it came. Did you guys get woke up by last night's thunder and lightning? Did you just go kablam? Hokey smokes.
Yo, the rain makes me sleep better.
Man, well, lightning in my bedroom doesn't. You know, you get that, like, you hear that, you see the light, and then you go, okay, if the thunder comes soon, that means that lightning bolt was nearby. And I was lying there in bed, and the bright flash came, and then, like, 1 second later, I went, that one was probably right there. Bam! Maybe you didn't get it the way we did, but boy, we sure got it hard last night. And now it's just kind of going to be hot and humid. So hang in there. I'll get you those record temperatures so you can brag to your grandkids someday about this. It's 11:12 on WGN. John Williams in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. We record a podcast here on Thursdays. It's called The Mincing Rascals, and we like to feature a highlight or two from it on Saturdays. So here's the highlight this week. This week, everybody was busy but me and Eric Zorn. And we have a pretty good crew, and they're almost always there. It's the first time we've reduced it to two, but one of them's Eric, so that's a pretty good thing. And Eric, like everybody, started talking a little bit about leaving the Tribune Tower. I don't want to dwell on that because Lord knows we've asked you to listen to us about that enough. But he did have something to say as we then moved on to the other news topics of the day that I think we can all take away.
If they were to come to me tomorrow and say, hey, big mistake has been made, we're going to move you back to the tower next month, I don't know that I think that would be a good thing. I think there was something psychologically good about leaving that building behind, about leaving the past behind. We're moving into this new digital future. Our newsroom, I don't know if you've seen any pictures of it. It's got, like, it looks like a sports bar. TVs everywhere, which we didn't have. Well, we did have some TVs, but now it really is. There's TVs everywhere. And the fact that we're sitting all close together, maybe that'll be good for the spirit of the newsroom, the news gathering itself, the process. I don't know. I'm a real open mind about it.
We're all putting that platitude to test. Change is good. And people that say that often aren't having to change. But now we all are.
And speaking of changes and not changes, we wanted to talk about the petition of Pat Quinn saying that we should change our mayor every two terms, right?
The former governor was on our show the other day, Pat Quinn. I've been a fan of Pat Quinn's for a long time. Now he's taken on the Chicago mayor's office. He said it should be limited to two terms. And in the November ballot, he wants a binding referendum. He'll need 100,000 signatures on petitions to get the item on the ballot. And the ballot will ask if the mayor's office of Chicago should be limited to two terms. The incumbent is already served two terms. The election would follow that ballot initiative. So if it passes, Rahm could not run for re-election.
Well, there's some question about that. The lawyers for Mayor Emanuel are saying that since the petition process will have already started for the next election, that the next election cycle will have begun, and therefore this initiative would only apply going forward. It would be an interesting legal question. I would expect that Emanuel might win that.
It does seem to be pulling the rug out for under him a little bit, although I brought this very issue up with Mr. Quinn, and he's adamant that this would apply to February's mayoral race, but maybe a judge or a jury will have to decide that.
He is a lawyer. I am not a lawyer. You're not a lawyer. Elif is not a lawyer. But I think that my sense is that that argument makes sense. Not Quinn's argument, but that Mayor Emanuel's argument makes sense, which is that you're sort of changing the rules once the game has begun, and the game will have begun. Now, I mean, that's beyond the question. You sound like you're in favor of this idea.
Honestly, I'm not a Rahm Emanuel hater. I didn't know that we were getting too much Rahm, or that there's somebody out there whose ideas are so great, but for Rahm's money and incumbency, we're not going to get him. I would vote for Rahm Emanuel. I'm not anxious to vote against him. He's not Mayor Daley yet. His father. I don't think we've been living under an Emanuel dynasty. Where are you on that?
Well, I'm opposed to term limits. I'm really glad we have term limits for the President of the United States, because I think that Donald Trump's instinct would be to try to be president for life, and I don't think we want presidents for life. I feel like the old cliche is that we have a term limit and it's at the ballot box. People can vote people out if they don't want them in. And it's not a free ride. You know, when you have somebody who's experienced, people talk about, you know, the guys who are down in Springfield for 20 years. Well, those people, first of all, they are accountable. They're elected and they know how things work down there. And when you impose legislative term limits, for instance, what you end up doing, as people who study this find out, is that you end up ceding power to the lobbyists and the career bureaucrats and so on, the people who actually know how things get done. If people are not there long enough, then they don't have the experience, so they're relying much more on unelected people for guidance. So I'm not sure that there's any evidence that states or municipalities with term limits are any better governed, any more responsibly governed, that there's any real benefit to term limits. There's this there's this strain in the American political life of just throw the bums out. I think that contributed a great deal to Trump's election, which is people are just like, they want change, they want something new. Remember, Barack Obama ran just on change. I just feel like if Mayor Emanuel continues to have the support of more than 50% of the voters in Chicago, then he ought to be able to continue to be mayor.
Well, Quinn's got 50,000 plus signatures.
I believe that if he gets 100,000, that the referendum would pass.
Yeah, and I don't know that he won't get 100,000 signatures. Maybe they'll fight the signatures. But really, if I'm Rahm Emanuel, I take this very seriously.
I tell you what term limits I'm in favor of also is legislative leadership term limits.
That
sounds nerdy, but what that means is that you have people like Mike Madigan, who've been Speaker of the House for, 35 of the last 37
years. Madigan should, out of good conscience, just cede the seat to somebody else.
Right.
For the same reason it's good for you guys to move to a new building, new blood. How about this letter? This is from a congressman from Illinois. They sent it to President Trump. It was the Republican congressional delegation. So we talked to Dan LaHood from downstate Illinois in Peoria, the 18th congressional district, about this the other day. They sent a letter to the president. They said, don't let Blah go out early, that here are his crimes. Here's why we impeached him. Here's what he did. Here's what he tried to do. I recommend that you read this letter. We'll put a link, but you can Google it, too. The congressional delegation from Illinois, the Republicans, letter to Donald Trump about Rod Blagojevich's prison sentence, because it's a 2.5-page summary of what he did and what he tried to do. It's succinct. It's a nice little encapsulation. I've long said, we've had this conversation on this podcast a lot lately, that Rod Blagojevich's 14 years were too long. He's at 7 now?
No, 6 years and 3 months or something like that.
Okay, so he's approaching his 7th year.
It's on my calendar in the wall. So.
I think if somebody said he could get out at 7 or 8, I think he should be let out. But not for the reasons that Donald Trump wants to let him out, not because he's got his own agenda. But the letter reminds us that if we let him out now, that would be less than the minimum sentencing requirements for the crimes for which he was convicted. Right. So if the president does that, it really does thumb its nose at justice and consequences. Now, the guy's making a good case here. Maybe Rod should stay in jail a little longer.
It's a good point. You know, and the thing is that you want these sentences to be strong because you really want to dissuade other politicians from doing the same kind of things that he has done. I mean, the deterrent effect of a good long
sentence is zero.
I'm not sure it's
We've
zero.
We've sent four governors to jail out of seven. Blagojevich didn't know that when he started to shake down the hospital.
It was kind of ironic. Some of the stuff he was doing was going on while former Governor Ryan was on trial.
Yeah.
So it's like the old story that, you know, they used to hang pickpockets in London, and people would go to the hangings to watch the hangings, and the pickpockets would go to the hangings while people were distracted. They would pickpockets. So
if you want to hang these people, if you want to keep them in jail, fine. But let's not kid ourselves that's going to solve the problem, because it ain't going to fix the problem.
No, it isn't. I think there's a certain anger at Blagojevich for the way he behaved
after
he was arrested, and his refusal to apologize. And I've certainly spoken about that. I did a column last week where I talked about another reason to keep Blagojevich locked up a little while longer is that when he was governor, you know, governors in Illinois, like most states, have the power of executive clemency, which is when, you know, someone says, you know, I was falsely convicted, or much more often, I was convicted of a felony back in 1979, and I can't get a job. Can you expunge my record? It was, you know, I sold a lid of marijuana or something like that. And so this is what the contours of mercy of the justice system allow for. And what happened when Blagojevich was governor was what happens in Illinois is people go to the Illinois Prisoner Review Board, they hear the case, and then the Illinois Prisoner Review Board makes a confidential recommendation to the governor, and the governor acts on that recommendation. Well, Blagojevich refused to act on most of them, and so these petitions on his desk grew to 3,000. He had to be sued by Cabrini Green Legal Aid. The state legislature had to pass a law saying, If the governor's ignored you for a certain amount of time, you're allowed to go to the courts.
He was lazy. Blago was lazy. He didn't go to work a lot of days. He stayed at home. He was wearing his tracksuit in his office.
He had to jog. Jogging was really good around his house.
I cut you off. You don't agree with me on that.
No. I don't think it was laziness. I think it was political cowardice. That when you act on one of these petitions, if you decline it, you're going to make people mad, right? And if you okay it, then you risk the Willie Horton problem, right? You say, look at Blagojevich. He let this guy out of prison, or he erased his criminal record, and he went on to, you know, get a job in a school where he, you know, did something terrible to kids, or he murdered somebody. And Blagojevich took their petitions, and he said, I can wait on this. So my proposed solution was, let's let him wait. Karma says we should wait a couple years and then look at it. Now, all the bets are off because Trump is so impulsive.
Is it too late to score the summit?
Eric Zorn and I on the Mincing Rascals, and then we go on to score the summit in Singapore, and we play part of that really interesting video that the U.S. government produced as a movie trailer to persuade Kim Jong-un to cooperate with the United States in these negotiations. They made a movie trailer, if you will. They made it in Korean and in English. They played it for the press, and they played it for the leader of North Korea. We start there and move on. That's called The Mincing Rascals. Wherever you listen to podcasts, I hope you subscribe to and make a regular habit of listening to The Mincing Rascals. Does your dad like to read books? I got a couple of other good book ideas for you. In fact, we'll play a clip from one of the authors of a book that I think is pretty good. I think the dad might enjoy. In a minute on WGN. Two books I've recently read and really enjoyed, and I think you might, and interviews with the authors are both at WGNradio.com. Look on the John Williams page, and you'll see a conversation with David Schwartz, who wrote The Last Man Who Knew Everything, The Life and Times of Enrico Fermi, the father of the nuclear age. We know about the Fermi lab in the Chicago area, and you're probably somewhat familiar with the story about them splitting the atom under the stands, actually on a squash court at the University of Chicago many years ago. He tells that and talks about that, and it's just fantastic. The Last Man Who Knew Everything, the last name is Schwartz. It's a very readable, non-wonky history, and I think you'll enjoy it. Another book I enjoyed is called The Feather Thief. Edwin Rist is a feather thief. At WGNradio.com, you can also hear the full interview I did with Kirk Wallace Johnson. His book, The Feather Thief, talks about an amazing story of a world-class flautist who, as a teenager, was also one of the best fly tiers in the world. That's the art of making ornate fishing lures using bird feathers.
And to get the rarest, most beautiful feathers in the world for his lures, he stole birds, beautiful, dead, preserved for scientific study, from a British museum. The value was millions of dollars for these rare birds. The scientific value was incalculable. And he gets caught, and he goes to trial for the crime. And a doctor who examined him says that his Asperger's syndrome is so profound that he could not help himself. They're very sympathetic with that diagnosis in England, and he walks away free. So here he finally catches up with the author of this book. He's writing the story, and Edwin Rist, free now, agrees to sit down to an interview. And so the author and Rist are face to face.
I'm paraphrasing a little bit from the book, but what he told me essentially was that he became what he needed to become at that point in his life. Because I had said, you know, like, I'm not an expert, and I don't want to sound like a jerk, but you don't seem like you have Asperger's to me. Like, you're making eye contact, and you're reading the subtext of all of my questions, and, you know, none of the kind of classic markers. And he smiled, and he goes, yeah, I never had a problem with eye contact before. I don't have a problem now. It's just at that time, suddenly, I couldn't look at anyone's eyes. And then he started rocking gently back and forth, and he started avoiding my eye contact and rubbing his right hand on his right leg, and he was kind of like demonstrating what he had done during the evaluation. I confronted the psychologist about this, and he said, well, yes, it could be faked, but here an expert would be able to detect that.
Yeah.
But that psychologist only spent an hour with them, and I've now spent 6 years of my life tracking this kid, and so
what a chilling moment. What a chilling moment. When they make the movie, oh my God, that will be the scene where then he just kind of winks at you. He didn't wink in the book, but in the movie, I guarantee you he will. So Edwin Rist today is where?
He is performing in symphonies throughout Germany under a different name, which I did not reveal in the book. He's free and just doing fine.
Kirk Wallace Johnson, the book is The Feather Thief. I really enjoyed it. It was reviewed in the New York Times last weekend. They didn't like it as much as I did. And The Last Man Who Knew Everything, The Life and Times of Enrico Fermi, with a nice Chicago connection. Incidentally, that scene where Rist reveals to the author, I really don't have that Asperger's like they think I did, but I can watch, I'll turn it on, is so similar to, and he agreed with me, to the scene in Primal Fear at the very end of the movie with Richard Gere and Edward Norton.
The minute you came into my cell, I knew everything was going to be okay. You saved my life. When will I see you again?
Well, that's up to the courts now. I don't want you to worry, Aaron. I'm going to stay on top of this, okay?
Hey, Mr. Vail?
Yeah.
Will you tell Miss Venable I'm sorry? Tell her I hope her neck is okay.
What did you just say?
What?
You told me you don't remember. You black out. So how do you know about her neck?
Well, good for you, Marty. I was going to let it go. You was looking so happy just now, I was thinking, But to tell you the truth, I'm glad you figured it.
Oh, man. Spoiler alert. Kind of wrecked the movie for you if you haven't seen it, but maybe that'll remind you to go watch it because it's really good.
You usually say spoiler alert before the spoiler. Just putting it out there.
My bad. News with Doma T. Coming up next. It was a movie from the 80s. Thank you, Doma T. So 11:43 on WGN, and producer Griffin usually gives us a song about this time on Saturdays for us to listen to, learn about, and argue about. We'll rate it on a scale of 1 to 100. We call that our vibe score. What's your vibe for that? How do you score it? What do we got there, Griff?
Ariana Grande with the song No Tears Left to Cry. It's a huge hit.
Why?
You don't like it?
I'm going to give it a 63. It's fine. I don't think it's distinguishable from a lot of other songs like that.
300 million YouTube views beg to differ.
It's a great song. I give it 100.
Oh,
okay. Domitee, talk about that song, please.
Well, we were in agreement just before you changed it up on me. I'll give it a 6.3.
6.3, not 63.
Wow. It follows the songwriting formula where you hate the song, but you still bob your head because you have no choice.
Yeah.
But I didn't like it. I like it.
That's it, exactly. Joe, your thoughts, please.
I'm okay with that song. Usually, Ariana Grande has a decent song, and then it just gets overplayed, and then I don't like it anymore. But I'd give that one a 79.
Griffin, go.
That might be the future for this one, but I like it. I think it's good. 80. But I'm right around where Joe is, but I think I'm a little more enthusiastic about it.
Can I request a vibe score, Griff?
Sure.
Because I don't think any of us have seen it but you, but how is the new Mr. Rogers movie?
I was going to bring this up. Won't You Be My Neighbor, directed by Morgan
I'm giving
Neville.
It 100. I haven't seen it yet.
I'm right around there. I give it a 95. I cried
really?
The whole time. And I don't know if you guys have seen the trailer, but
yeah.
I cried through that. Like it only has 2.5 minutes to get you there, and within 20 seconds, I was like, okay. I almost don't even need to see the movie. I've already cried a lot at this trailer, but then it's great.
It's a documentary about Mr. Rogers?
Yeah, and about his show, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and then it kind of follows him to the end of his life.
You know, I grew up around him, but I never followed his show. It was never for me, and it was never really for my kids that much. Here's what I don't know. Does he have a wife and kids?
Yes.
He did?
Yep.
And they're all happy and nice folks, too, and stuff like that?
Yeah, they do explore the fact that he seemed very unknowable outside of his show. There's no one like him.
So yeah.
That's what's especially good about this. It's not as fawning as I thought it would be entirely. Like, of course, we all love Mr. Rogers. And there's plenty of that. But there is more rigor in digging into what he was actually like and tracks the fact that he kind of, in his way, turned into a cranky old man the way everybody does, which you don't expect.
Yeah.
But it's a very loving portrait, of course, and it was beautiful. I absolutely loved it.
I saw the part where, who is the, did they talk to one of his castmates or some of his castmates?
Yeah.
And some of that, what I saw as a clip was really just so endearing, but I didn't see the movie, so it's really good. Huh?
You've got, I just fully recommend it, yeah.
And it's not even that long.
90 minutes, yeah.
No, it's not long.
I also saw Hereditary. That's a movie that everybody's talking about. Have you guys heard of that one?
No, I haven't heard of that.
Scary movie called Hereditary. All right, fine. You haven't heard of it. But it's very scary.
Didn't say it was bad.
Yeah. No.
And we didn't say you're bad.
I'm just saying the talk around it in my orbit has been very strong. It seems like everybody's seen it, but I guess not. But it's with Toni Collette. It's terrifying.
You have a really exclusive orbit, though. You gotta, you know, you're cooler than us.
I know, I didn't let you.
Well, I know this movie is out there, but I haven't seen it yet.
It's horrifying.
Is it one? Just give us the backdrop.
It's about Toni Collette. Her mother dies in the beginning, and then I don't know. It's just a scary movie.
You don't want to give away too much?
Kind of. As soon as I start, then I'll probably end up revealing too much. But
we're giving away endings on today's show anyway, so
that's
you might as well.
Excuse me, I gave away the ending of Primal Fear, and that movie was made in the 1980s. So
I think it's the 90s, but yeah, sure.
I think what's the statute of limitations on talking about the end of a movie,
it
Griffin?
It depends, but I think you're fine there.
These days, like 2 days.
If it's,
like 48 hours.
All right, so at the end of Hereditary?
Yeah, okay, fine.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to do that.
He saw Rent coming, and he knew to drive the ship away from that.
Well, you did see First Reformed. I'm sorry, we'll get off movies in a sec. But
okay.
With Ethan Hawke, and he plays a reverend. What did you think of that?
That is so complicated for me because I knew it was a really good movie that was way over my head.
By Paul Schrader, who wrote Taxi Driver and Raging Bull. He's had a long, storied career.
I know I'm watching a great movie by a great, great filmmaker that I'm not loving that much, that I'm not getting that much. So I want to give it a higher rating than maybe my enjoyment level was. I'm giving, what's the name of this movie that I saw?
First Reformed.
First Reformed. And 81, final answer.
Yeah, I go like 95 for that one, too.
Wow, 95.
It blew me away.
I'll tell you what, folks, if you go see this movie, just be ready for the first hour. You're going to go, this is a movie, right? Like, something's going to happen, right?
It's very slow, absolutely.
It's the slowest movie you'll ever
very
see.
Very static. The camera doesn't move much, either. It's very formal. Loved it. No, but you just got to... But then it hits hard at the end, I think.
And then in the last 30 minutes, you go, okay, this would be a good place for a movie 90 minutes in. But it's a fine film.
I disagree. But moving on. That's the movie roundup. Okay. What else
all
we got?
I'm all done. Oh, I wanted to ask you guys two things. Joe, soccer. World Cup soccer. 1 to 100. How much do you love it?
60.
Oh, my. I'm 61, just to kind of leap over Joe, because I will watch it. I will. If World Cup soccer is on, I will watch it.
I honestly have a tough time getting into it. I have plenty of friends that like soccer. I understand it is an exciting sport, but I mean, if I've got nothing invested into the game, it's really tough for me to get into it.
I give it a 40, but if you're ever in a bar with people who really love soccer, yeah, it's hard not to catch the bug. I mean, they get really passionate about it. It's a big deal. It's a big deal.
And it's weird, too, because if you're in a bar with a bunch of people who are really into it, there still ain't nothing happening on TV except this. You cannot watch soccer carefully, closely, and not appreciate the athleticism of these guys. They are sprinting.
Full 50, speed.
Stopping, kicking the ball with their left foot, and then going the other way. And
non-stop.
They do that for 90 minutes.
But the energy of the fans to watch that for 90 minutes with no score and still be completely engaged boggles the mind.
Yeah, I don't know that I have that. All right, and then the Chicago White Sox. Huh? Milwaukee, Boston, Cleveland, all great series. Joe, give me your vibe for the White Sox right now.
I'll definitely give them an 80. I mean, they're putting together some good baseball. Yesterday, a tough loss, an uncharacteristic, like, bobble by Jose Abreu that ended up being the deciding run, but he made a spectacular play two nights ago, getting a quick grounder and, you know, turning a double play. But no, they're really putting together some good games. It's great to see them winning against good teams too. But for some reason, Detroit just has their number. Sox are 1-7 against the Tigers this year, and I mean, hopefully, you see Lucas Giolito get maybe into a rhythm today. Reynaldo Lopez yesterday is really starting to show some good things on the mound. 9 quality starts for him. So hopefully this is kind of the White Sox turning the new leaf this season.
I'm so enjoying their games lately. Hey, before we wrap this up, are there anything you guys want to throw at us? I normally ask you this off the air. I didn't today. Joe Domaty, anything else you want the group to consider?
Well, mine is more boring than the stuff you guys put out there. But I don't know if you guys saw this story. University of Chicago getting rid of the requirement for students to apply with SAT and ACT scores. Zero. This is asinine or 100. Great idea.
94.
Expands. 94. You
what
love
a great
it.
Idea. What a great idea. Where are you on that, Domaty?
I don't know, because I want to say 95 because I have a young friend who's getting out of high school, and I love that he has this opportunity. Great story. Bad test taker. But then on the other hand, so many people had to take these tests.
I don't know. I don't think that is a perfect predictor of success in school or what they can lend to a university. I know too many young kids who I thought were great students and would have been great assets to those college communities, and they didn't take a test well.
I
think that just stymies a lot of opportunity for the student and the school.
And for the young man I'm thinking about, culturally, he took some practice tests and he didn't even understand the references in the question, and that just made him nervous just seeing it.
Well, that's part of it.
Yeah.
And especially in this day and age, the test takers are oftentimes the kids who also had a lot of help taking tests, learning how to do it and taking classes and stuff. So I'm not sure that it's even fair anymore.
Right.
But don't they construct those tests to try and make you get nervous and to confuse you? Like, aren't some of the answers, the way they're worded, aren't they tried or in an effort to confuse the test taker?
So that you what?
So like how well you crack under pressure? Yeah. Crack under pressure, and
well, you're not going to be an astronaut. You just want to go to the University of Chicago for crying
out. Right. I'm not saying I'm for either side. I just remember learning that during gearing
they test
up the SAT.
Your attention to detail, Joe. Like like you're saying, like they might put a word in there, and if you miss that word, it changes your understanding.
Or like the math section, they would put a commonly mistaken answer in one of the multiple choices.
We are out of time. It's 11:53. So, yeah, the U of C is changing their approach on that. I'm going to turn on the street microphone one last time. Hey, I'm John Williams. Who are you guys?
Hi, Los Angeles, California.
Hey, welcome to Chicago. How are you?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Who are your friends here?
This is my roommate and her family.
Where are they from?
Chicago.
Hey, welcome. What, Palatine, welcome to the show. Welcome to the Showcase Studio. This is our last day from the Showcase Studio.
Wow.
So we're glad to share it with you. You got your Cubs stuff on.
You. Yeah, we did a tour at Wrigley this morning.
Yeah, you know they're on the road, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I just want to make sure you knew that.
We did the tour.
Yeah, it's fun, isn't it?
It's cool.
Yeah, it's a great day to be there. It's lovely. Yeah. Well, nice to meet you all. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for listening.